today's programme, Citizens Assembly on Gender Equality backs constitutional change and gender quotas. We get immediate reaction and talk to Chairperson Catherine Day. Summer is in the air, but will we be holidaying at home or abroad? And will rural Ireland be hit hardest in efforts to meet climate change targets? All that and more coming up after the news with Ray Kennedy. Thanks, Ray. Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Joe O'Brien, Green Party TD for Fingal and Minister of State for Community Development and Charities, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan and spokesperson on agriculture, and Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. But first today, I want to welcome Catherine Day, who chaired the Citizens' Assembly on Gender Equality, which has just issued its recommendations. As you heard there in the bulletin, the Assembly agreed 45 priority recommendations covering areas including the Constitution, politics and leadership, caregiving, childcare, domestic, sexual and gender-based violence, pay and the workplace, and social protection. I need to take a breath after you just reading out what you were looking at, Catherine. Before we get to those recommendations, this Assembly was almost totally derailed by COVID.
Yes, it was, because we'd only just started our work when COVID hit. So then we had to regroup and think, either do we postpone it and wait till the COVID is over, or do we move online? And we decided to move online because I think our members felt post-COVID COVID Ireland will be different, and they wanted to get their recommendations in on time as part of shaping that new Ireland.
And I know you have said yourself that COVID in itself threw a lot of the issues that you were discussing into sharp relief.
Yes, I think particularly the whole issue of care came very much to the forefront, understandably, because people were either worried about themselves or their loved ones, and we had several caregivers in the Assembly. And I think what worried people was that our society suddenly seemed not to give the value to care that the COVID was showing us was such a vital thing for all of us. And so there are a lot of recommendations about improving the pay and conditions of carers, whether they be child carers or those caring for older people or those with disabilities. And then also giving those who are receiving care more choice, you know, more possibilities to stay at home, more personalised care. And also for there not to be a huge change when a young person needing lifelong care reaches 18, that they don't have to reapply for all the services that they still need the day after their 18th birthday.
As you say, so COVID intervened. You had, I think, two plenary sessions before you had to take the decision to go online. And am I right in saying there was six Zoom meetings over the course of the last year?
Well, we actually had more than that, because we found that wasn't enough. So we had some evening sessions as well. What we did was we consulted some online education people and also some other citizens' assemblies. And we then pre-recorded all of the presentations, all the factual information the citizens were getting. And the poor things, we sent them out one or two videos a week to look at in their own time, so that we maximised the actual meeting time for discussion between the members. But then we found that if we were only focusing on individual topics, we were missing the kind of wider context of what is the Assembly all about. So we had several evening meetings as well to talk about, well, where are we going and how do we want this to happen? What kind of recommendations do we want to have? And the citizens were very clear they want to advocate real change, and they didn't want any civil service language. They wanted clear, sharp, focused recommendations so that the Oireachtas would be in no doubt about what they want.
And you're confident, are you, that there was enough time and space under the circumstances to deliberate on such an enormous agenda?
Actually, I do, because this is not a policy group and they are not legislators. They were asked to look at a range of issues and to tell the Oireachtas what they would recommend for advancing gender equality in Ireland. And you could go on for 5 years on these topics, but that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was to give the citizens time and space to be informed, to confront different ideas, and then to come out with whatever they wanted to recommend. And it was interesting in the process, a lot of the members would say their awareness of the situation as regards gender inequality was growing as we went through all of the different presentations.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you in terms of that, because a lot of the votes are very
strong in favour of the recommendation that came out, over 80%, over 90%, 100% in one of the cases I just saw there. So is that representative of, as these 99 citizens we are told should be, of the nation?
Well, two things I'd say about that. One is that it was a reflection of the process we went through. We started with over 500 recommendations generated by the citizens, and everybody realised we couldn't make 500 recommendations. So then we went into a process of refining them and trying to narrow them down to the real priorities. And secondly, people said the same thing about the previous assembly and the Convention on the Constitution. And in fact, on both of those previous occasions, when the votes from the referendums were tallied, they were very close to the votes in the Citizens' Assembly. And
so it has proven in the past to be reflective of the national views on these issues.
Yes.
Well, let's go. You mentioned referendum there. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the key recommendations coming out of this assembly is the recommendations for constitutional change, Articles 40 and 41. Just very briefly, is there anything surprising in terms of what's been recommended there?
Well, I think it's not surprising that the citizens voted overwhelmingly to take out what's known as the Woman in the Home Clause. It is outdated for 21st century Ireland. But what is maybe a bit more surprising is that they didn't want just to take that outdated wording out of the Constitution. They want to replace it with reasonably very strong language on an obligation for the state to take reasonable measures to support care in the home and in the community. And I think that's partly under the influence of COVID, but also partly a growing feeling that we as a society don't place a sufficient value on care, and the citizens want that changed.
Another recommendation that will, and I see already in some of the responses on Twitter that now that these recommendations are public, gender quotas. And it's always controversial. But you're recommending going from the political sphere. We know they had 30% gender quotas for the last elections. You're saying this should be for all political elections and move to 40%.
Yeah, this was a subject that was quite intensely debated because not everybody was on board. Even at the end, the vote numbers are different on each of the components of this part of the recommendations. But the lowest vote was 75%. So 75% of the assembly and upwards opted to recommend gender quotas. And the main reason is that people want to see change now. They think the pace of change is too slow, and that I think COVID again has shown that a lot of our public bodies and our public representations are not representative of society. Women are not as present in a lot of these areas as they are by terms of percentage of the population.
Public bodies, yes. Bodies that are in receipt of public funding, yes. Political. What about private companies? There is a recommendation in here that we should legislate to force private companies to have 40% of women on their boards.
Again, that was the mood of the moment. There was a lot of debate about, will you get token women, and shouldn't it be the best qualified person? Again, I think the mood was, we want to see change now. Women should be represented. Men should be represented where they're underrepresented. So it wasn't only about women's rights, it's also about men's rights. Realistic? I think so. More and more countries inside the EU are coming to that conclusion that you need to make change happen if you want to see it happen. And our citizens also put in a review clause that this should be reviewed every 5 years, because if we reach those levels of representation, then we don't need to legislate for it anymore and we could remove that. But it's to get quickly to a different way in which we have closer to gender equality in Ireland.
What are the next steps now? What happens now?
Well, the recommendations are being published today, so everybody can have a look at them. We will do a report on the work of the Assembly. This was the first online Assembly, Citizens' Assembly in Ireland, so we want to talk about how we did that and also how our members felt about that. And the recommendations go to the Oireachtas. The Taoiseach has said that each recommendation will be given careful and serious consideration. So it will be up to the Oireachtas to respond to the recommendations. Some could be implemented quickly. Some will take longer. We have recommendations going up to 2030 and even 2035.
The referendum, the constitutional change, would that require three separate referenda to referendums to do?
Well, there are three separate questions, but they could all be asked on the same day. That's a matter for the Oireachtas and for the government.
Do you envisage that happening in the short term or medium term?
Well, part of the reason for having this Citizens' Assembly was that the Constitution, the Convention on the Constitution, recommended in 2012, I think, to take out this clause in the Constitution. And it was never put to a referendum. But we think that now the views...
Because, of course, there was controversy around whether it would just be deleted or we would include new language.
Yes, and the Citizens' Assembly has addressed that question, and they are very clear that they want to delete it and replace it by a provision on care. And one interesting thing, Katie, I think that adds to the credibility of the recommendations is we polled the citizens on whether they were prepared to pay higher taxes to make a reality of their recommendations. And I must say, I think it's very interesting that they voted by 95% to say that if it was necessary to increase public spending through increased taxation to get these recommendations implemented, they were prepared to do that.
Of course, that's not the in relation to the constitutional change, but there are many, many recommendations in here which would be very expensive to the public purse were they to be implemented.
Well, not necessarily. There can be shifting of funding. I mean, take the example of childcare, where Irish parents are paying among the highest childcare fees in Europe. If the childcare was publicly funded, those parents would not necessarily be paying more in tax, or some would. But so there, it's not necessarily all going to go in one direction. But this is why we polled the citizens and we said, look, if you want your recommendations to be taken seriously, you have to say whether you would be prepared to pay more in the end for this or not. And the response was pretty overwhelming.
OK, well, we'll see what the politicians have to say about that, and we'll be getting more reaction on this after the break. But for now, Catherine Day, many thanks for coming in to us with that.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And as you heard there from Catherine Day before the break, the Citizens Assembly on Gender Equality has issued 45 priority recommendations after a year and a half of deliberation. And I'm joined on the line now by Orla O'Connor, Director of the National Women's Council of Ireland. Good afternoon, Orla.
Good afternoon, Katie.
What do you sense now? You've an overview of this and you've been watching this very closely, obviously. What do you believe is the most significant recommendation to emerge from this Assembly?
Well, I think the first thing really, Katie, is I really want to thank the citizens, because I think they have done an enormous service to women's equality, to gender equality and to women's future in Ireland. I mean, these are absolutely groundbreaking recommendations that the citizens have brought forward, and they have sent such a strong and clear signal to government that women's equality needs to be at the centre of our constitution, our legislation and our policies. And when you look at the breadth of the recommendations, I also think you know, it's an enormous credit to the chairperson, Catherine Day, and her team to have achieved this in these really difficult times. So I think we really do need to thank them for their service. I mean, for us in the National Women's Council, there are so many of the recommendations of issues that were at the core of women's equality that we have been campaigning for. But obviously, you know, very clearly today, there's a very clear message to government that we need to have a referendum on Article 41.2. That, and very importantly, and this was why the Women's Council actually campaigned for the Citizens' Assembly, because we knew that it wasn't enough to simply delete the clause, that we need to have a recognition and to value and recognise care. And what the citizens have said very clearly is that it does need to be valued and recognised. It needs to be in the fabric of Irish society. It needs to be in our constitution. And they've also spelled out very clearly how it needs to be in legislation, in policies, and it needs to be paid for. So I think, you know, there's a very clear message to government there on the need for the referendum. And they've gone further, because they've said the whole article needs to be looked at in terms of how we define the family, and that we need to recognise the whole diversity of families and not just one based on marriage. And I think, you know, that is absolutely groundbreaking, and we're delighted to see that today.
And when would you anticipate that this might happen? I mean, you're assuming, are you, that the government will accept these recommendations?
Well, I think, you know, there is overwhelming support. And I mean, I think it was really good to see it was absolutely unanimous in the Assembly, the support for this. So, yeah, I mean, what we would like to see in the Women's Council is, we know that these recommendations have to go into the Oireachtas, but we would absolutely like to see that everything is put in place to have the referendum. Most likely, I would imagine, in the start of 22, because we probably do not want to have a referendum in the sort of COVID pandemic. But there are many recommendations that can also be moved on very quickly. I mean, I think what's really significant in this report is when you bring together the recommendations, and clearly the citizens say this, that they want to see quality public services for all. They want to see public childcare. And they also want to see, which is critically important at the moment, a universal pension for all to end the discrimination against women in our pension system.
Is there, though, Orla, a certain bang of, you know, motherhood and apple pie out of this? Because obviously everybody would like to see everybody supported. But when it comes down to making choices, you know, and when you are making choices about where the taxpayers' money needs to be spent, that could be a different matter.
But isn't that so significant? And I think, you know, it'll probably be one citizens' assembly that will stand out from all, in that the citizens have made a very clear statement in terms of saying that they want different budget choices made. They want choices made that support public services. And they have said, and we're prepared to pay for it. I mean, Katie, I don't know how many times I've been on different, you know, programmes, campaigning for the National Women's Council and saying these things need to be done, and it being put back, oh, but people aren't prepared to pay. The citizens have said, yes, we are. But they've also said, and you need to make different choices, because they recognise that these are about choices. So there's some critical things being said here that I think it's really important that the government and our politicians really listen to, because this is a very strong message in terms of, and I think as well what it shows, as all of the citizens' assemblies have shown, is that the people in Ireland are well ahead of the thinking and of our political leaders.
Are they, though?
And they do know what they want.
Orla, I'm just looking at a text that has come into us from Jack in Dublin 6 West. Katie, let's be honest, let's be totally frank. The Citizens' Assembly is clearly representative of a certain liberal clique, but they are not representative of broader society. On this occasion, mainstream society will not be caught on the hop.
Well, I think that's clearly not true. And I mean, Chairperson Catherine Day has just outlined to you how the Citizens' Assembly is selected. So it is a very representative sample of Irish society. And I think rightly she has, you know, drawn attention to previous ones, and then when they have come to a vote, be it on the abortion referendum, be it on marriage equality, that actually the vote reflected what we saw in the Citizens' Assembly. So no, I mean, I think the process around the Citizens' Assembly and the way in which it is done is actually a really good reflection. It, you know, and it's an accurate reflection of where people are. But what it does show, and what is necessary on issues, is that, because the process in the Citizens' Assembly is that if you give people the opportunity, the time for discussion, for the deliberation, to see the facts and also to see the impact. And I think that was such an important piece, to see the impact that inequalities have. And you can see in their recommendations how they've prioritised groups like carers, like disabled women, like lone parents who are at most risk of poverty in our society. And they've said that those groups need to be cared for, the supports need to be there, and we need to pay for them.
Okay, I just want to bring in Katrina Lynch now. Katrina is president of Coorum, an organisation for stay-at-home parents. Katrina, you have previously campaigned to retain this article in the Constitution, the Women in the Home article. Where do you stand on it today?
Okay, well, we would have a different point of view, obviously. And if I could just say, first of all, we were terribly disappointed that the Citizens' Assembly decided, by omission, not to ask us for our opinion. Because we're the only government-recognised body that deals specifically with Article 41.2. And so kudos to RTE and your researcher, Mary O'Hagan, who went to the trouble of getting in contact with us and asking for our comment. We were asked to make a comment the last time the Article 41.2 was considered for deletion and change. And we would like to think that on foot of our contribution, because we are the people who are mostly concerned specifically with this article, that the Assembly changed their mind and decided to leave the article in place. So there is an alternative point of view, but sadly the Citizens' Assembly didn't get to hear anything about it, and so I'm not surprised that they have opted to change, delete, or whatever it is specifically that they decided to do, because they simply haven't heard our point of view.
And what is your point of view specifically, Katrina? Is it that it's fine the way it is, that it protects mothers in the home in a way that you would support?
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is for us to realise what we're discussing rather than what we are not discussing. We're not saying that women have to be in the home. This is an article which gives recognition and kudos to the work that is done by the mother in the home or the father. We don't have a problem with it being the parent in the home. And I think everybody in the country at this stage, post-pandemic, is very aware of what a challenge it is to care for children at home. And that any parent who is staying at home to be the main child carer for their children is doing very hard and very good work. And that we do believe the state should recognise the work that specifically mums and dads do in rearing their family and looking after it. And that, you know, the that we should be, I'm sorry, I've interrupted you.
I was actually going to interrupt you, Katrina, because I think I know what Orla is going to say in relation. I'll just put that back to you, Orla, in terms of the people feeling that they're losing some recognition if this changes.
Well, I'm not sure if Katrina has had the chance to look at the recommendation, but actually, you know, what the Citizens Assembly have said is to strengthen and to insert in the Constitution to value and recognise care. And the wording that's recommended is to oblige the state to take reasonable measures to support care within the home and the wider community. So in fact, what, you know, if this were to be put to the people and accepted and, you know, and voted on, then we would have, for the first time, a real recognition of care and care in the fullest sense, because I think that the piece within the home and the wider community shows the consideration that the citizens have given, and also throughout the rest of the recommendations, because there is very strong recommendations with regard to valuing and respecting care, the types of supports that carers need, and taking on some of the issues that, you know, that you have mentioned, Katrina, with regard to, you know, just how difficult it is in terms of being a carer. And also, and I think it is a real added value, they have also spoken about the needs of disabled women in terms of living independently and having choices with regard to the care that they wish to receive. Okay. So actually there's a real strengthening of care, and it's a really significant statement with regard to care that we have never seen before in Irish society.
Okay, well, let's see where we go from statements and what will happen in reality. Minister Joe O'Brien,
comment, Katie, on that, please, before
Katrina,
I finish.
Quickly, if you can. Thank you.
Certainly. I'm not talking about carers. This is a specific article that recognises parents and the work that parents do. Carers are different. They have a much bigger umbrella. I think it's very important that, and I would really be encouraging the government, you're going to talk to a minister now, that they would look at the draconian individual tax individualisation, which penalises parents who surrender their income and choose to look after their children themselves in the home. That's a piece of social engineering that is completely anti a parent who wants to stay at home and look after their own children. So I would be encouraging our government to elevate the wonderful work that parents do in the home, not just carers in general, but parents, mothers and fathers, and that would be elevated and kept in the Constitution, not deleted and not diluted.
Okay.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you heard Katrina Lynch, you heard Ola O'Connor. Minister, what is the government poised to do in response to these recommendations?
Well, just initially, to welcome the report, I think most people recognise and accept that gender inequality, and particularly attitudes towards women and negative attitudes towards women, are reflected in a lot of our institutions and a lot of our policies and in every corner of society in many ways. So it's very good and encouraging, and I really welcome that the recommendations from the Assembly are very strong. We will be going through them one by one. We will be responding to them individually as well.
Specifically about the constitutional change.
Well, I welcome the language on carers. Green Party in particular have been strong on this, and we push for this particular type of language as well, and recognition of carers and carers' role as well. I also think it's very, very welcome that the issues that lone parents face as well have been drawn out and named in this constitutional.
Could we see this happening in 2022 as Orla O'Connor is calling for?
Gosh, well, that's difficult to predict. Obviously, at the moment, we're not planning any kind of electoral event. Potentially, but you know that's a big question.
Okay, but what happens now? Because we know what happened previously when assemblies made recommendations for constitutional change. Is there anybody looking at this in terms of putting a committee in place and Oireachtas committee?
We started looking at it straight away, and we will give formal responses on each one, and it will go to the Oireachtas as well and be debated.
Right. So is that what we can expect, an Oireachtas committee to take this on and then bring us to a wording?
Government will give formal responses to each of the proposals first anyway, and then we'll take it from there. Obviously, committee procedures and capacity is restrained at the moment in terms of restrictions. So, I mean, it's not going to be nothing substantial happen this side of the summer, I think.
Okay, but today, with this recommendation, is it now inevitable that we're going to have a change to this provision, these articles in the Constitution?
Well, none of it is inevitable. These are recommendations, but ones that we will take very seriously. And I think previous citizens' assemblies, you know, record will show that government have taken them very seriously and acted upon them as well.
What about the quotas?
Yeah.
So this is moving from 30% to 40% and extending it to much greater realms than we're currently
Yeah, well, I
noted
in particular in relation to political parties, I think it's quite an important one. I think a lot of these other issues that come under the remit of political parties will happen quicker if political parties themselves move first as well. So I would welcome them. I would welcome them quotas and proposals.
And in terms of the childcare provisions, provisions for a universal pension, provisions for pensions for carers, there is a huge agenda there that would have very, very big implications for the Exchequer.
Yeah.
Where will the Green Party stand on those?
Well, as government, we need to assess them all and see where we can take them. I would say there are some of the recommendations that we have the ball rolling on them, in particular on the childcare one as well. I mean, it's been recognised and it is part of government's plan to bulk up the state involvement in childcare and improve that level of service to parents across the country as well.
Matt Carthy.
Yeah, I think this report, I have to say, and I've only read it while I was waiting to come into the studio, I think it's actually seismic. I'm really, really pleasantly surprised by the recognition throughout the recommendations that go beyond just gender inequality, which is very important, but there's a recognition that permeates right through this report of the issue of economic inequality that affects women disproportionately. But there are references here that don't require constitutional change. They require political ambition and political vision. The issue of the living wage, universal state pension, the permutation of the need for improved public services. In other words, this is calling for a different political dispensation. I was really interested to hear Catherine Day talk about the very clear ambition from within the Citizens' Assembly that there will be something new as we emerge from COVID. And I think it's very reflective of what you will have heard Sinn Féin's spokesperson saying in the Dáil, that this can't, while we're coming out of the COVID scenario, this can't just be about a return to the old order. We need to learn the lessons. You know, even the concept of the different terms and conditions for those engaged in care services, people who have, you know, obviously been increased in terms of their standing, the public model of childcare, something that would be just a completely new order and would be completely contrary to the direction that this current government are going on. So by and large, I welcome all of this, but of course it's going to require political will and...
Oh, it's going to require a lot of political will because, as you say, some of these are very challenging.
Absolutely. And I was struck last night, if I can just say this, reading the actual wording of the current constitutional provision that says the state shall therefore endeavour to ensure that mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home. Now, I come from, I was reared by a single parent. I can tell you that hundreds of thousands of lives
would have been much better had that actually been taken literally. Unfortunately, rather than being taken literally, it was used to underline a culture and a permutation of gender inequality as opposed to actually providing. So this has to be much more about changing the rhetoric. This has to be actually going to the heart of how we manage the economy and our society.
Okay, I want to bring in Verona. Verona, thanks for patiently hanging on there for us. Verona Murphy. I was talking to Catherine Day there about the quotas, the gender quotas, which I think will be a bone of contention for many people. And I can see it already even on the social media reaction to this. A lot of men and women, indeed, saying that this is a retrograde step.
Well, look, I don't agree. I think slowly we're getting to gender quotas. But what we don't want to see is a narrative developed that women are given positions because they're women. We need to ensure that gender equality and positions are filled based on ability, but ensuring that measures and requirements are in place to enable women to apply for those positions. And I think if you look at my speech in the Dáil on International Women's Day, we actually have women outperforming at third level qualification, outperforming their male counterparts. So I think ability and qualifications shouldn't be an issue. We've had an 18% increase in 40 years on female candidates in Dáil Éireann. We've gone from 8 in the 1980s to 36 today, just accounting for 22.5% for politicians. But we have to look, the ability is there. And as someone who is a former candidate in a party, I'd say, you know, women are not always given the same level of encouragement of male counterparts or even male candidates in the same party.
You come from a business background, Verona. The recommendation that there should be legislation introduced to force private companies to have 40% representation of women on their boards. How will that be viewed in the business community?
I don't think it'll be a difficulty. And I think the reality is any of us that see our younger generations now, and, you know, we wouldn't want to instill it any other way other than that we should be looking for equal society. I can't see that that's an issue. I think the bigger issue is that we have professions that women can't get into for some of the most, what you would call, you know, for practical resources. I mean, if a woman wants to become a lorry driver, truck driver, you've referenced my previous position in business. Like, a woman, if she leaves Donegal and travels to Dublin, doesn't actually have anywhere to go to the bathroom. Not in the same way that a man can. Now, that's just a basic human right. And it just brings home the level of inequality that's there. We need to make the provisions for gender equality to evolve naturally in society. So I agree with Matt. I think we need to do this. It shouldn't be about money. Certainly, that should not be the stalling point. And anything that can be brought in without referendum should be worked on and focused on.
OK. Orla O'Connor, before we leave it, what's the first response you'd like to see? What would you like to see government tackling first in relation to this?
Well, we absolutely would like to see the government make an announcement with regard to the referendum, because it needs to happen and the citizens have put in an enormous amount of time and consideration into this. But in relation to the rest of the recommendations that need legislative or some, it's about policy direction. So we want the government to take this on board. What the citizens have done is they've handed to government a very, you know, clear framework for how you move forward for women and gender equality in Ireland. And we want the government to listen to that in the same way that the citizens have asked them to do today and to start to integrate this. But, you know, Matt is right in terms of saying this is a seismic shift. And it absolutely is. This is a new way of looking at our public services and at women's equality overall. And the government need to make that decision to do that, because, you know, the citizens have really, you know, they couldn't have sent a stronger signal to the government today about how they want to see change happen. And I think one of the clear points is that the pace of change with regard to women's equality is too slow. And that's why this is so strong and why they've looked for things like quotas in it, because every woman in Ireland is tired of waiting for equality. So this is about taking action now.
OK, we'll leave that there. Orla O'Connor, and before you, Catriona Lynch, many thanks for joining us on that. We'll take a break.
Tweet at SaturdayRTE.
And we turn again to COVID and restrictions and our vaccination programme. Minister Joe O'Brien, we, according to, and it's been confirmed by Breen McGrath this morning, we're going to get a boost of 165,000 overdue AstraZeneca doses, which of course is very, very welcome. But we're still waiting for that NIAC decision on the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Can we be clear that if that vaccine is not approved for use for all age groups or for the under 60s, is that going to hold up our reopening programme?
Look, we have a target of 80% people vaccinated by the end of June, and we're sticking to that. There is going to be ups, there's going to be downs, there has been already, and there will be in the future as well. We're in a very good place. We have 1.3 million people, our vaccines administered, 25% of people have had their first dose, 10% the second dose, 150,000 people registered last week for the online portal as well. We're in a good place. And just to say as well, as a piece of information, 60 to 64 year olds can now register as of yesterday as well for their dose. I would say this weekend and next weekend, I suppose it's important people enjoy themselves. It's important people enjoy themselves outdoors. But we are still limited to meeting one household outdoors as well. And it'll be a temptation, I think, because there's huge pressure building up on people to get out and have a bit of release as well. But We're almost there. It's just important to give people a reminder, I suppose, and to acknowledge the efforts that have gone.
Have you been out and about recently, Joe?
And this is why I say
you in the last few days and the last week or two. I mean, there is that's gone as a.
Well, this is why I say it, and this is why I think we're on, in terms of since the pandemic started, we're on week 59 now at the moment. We need to hold tough for another couple of weeks. The vaccine rollout is going to increase further over the next couple of weeks as well, and into May and June. But just that reminder to people, particularly over this weekend and the bank holiday weekend, next weekend, it is one other household outdoors. And if people can enjoy themselves within the limitations.
There must be some of the biggest households I've ever seen over the last number of weeks. Because I think it's very hard to sit here and just suggest to people that they stick with a rule that has clearly been broken left, right and centre before.
Well, I think the majority of people are still complying. Obviously, when we see people who are not, it comes to our attention and it's frustrating and annoying. And I'd, you know, really ask them people to...
But are people making decisions themselves as regards risk? And I know Philip Nolan from NPHET has acknowledged that the risk has declined hugely because people are actually taking their gatherings outdoors, that they're, when they're meeting people, they're meeting outdoors, and that that has contributed to our lower numbers over the last number of weeks since St. Patrick's Day and Easter. So people are making those decisions for themselves now.
Well, I'll just reiterate. I've seen it as well, but we're almost there. We're at this really critical tipping point at the moment where the vaccine situation is, we need it a little bit stronger before we release to the next step as well. And Cabinet will be meeting next week to make decisions about May. We're in a very good place at the moment to make positive decisions about May, but we're going to be watching the figures very closely over the next couple of days as well.
Verona Murphy. We're in a good place, but we need to be very careful.
Well, sorry, Katie, I think I'm in agreement with you. I appreciate what Joe has to say, but I think what is actually frustrating and annoying is that this government have taken no cognizance of what the World Health Organization has had to say in relation to lockdowns, that they do not work for prolonged periods of time. And I'm with you.
It's more complex than that in terms of
rephrase it. What they have said is that they should not be used for prolonged periods of times. They should be used as circuit breakers. What we have is the Irish people in the longest lockdown in the EU, if not the world.
And we're in a better place in the EU than most other countries at the moment.
That's
not true what you're saying.
In most cases now, we can see that people are no longer playing ball or abiding by the rules. They are taking on board what they see as social distancing, mask wearing, and taking on board that they go out and they do it safely themselves.
Would you be supportive of that? You don't have a problem with that, Verona?
No, I don't. I think the question is, where is the government's plan to ensure that we can reopen? It's not as simple as switching a light on when we talk about reopening, because what we have to question here is, whether we can prevent the bulb from blowing. Have the precious the previous failures of government in relation to our testing and tracing system, have they been resourced now to a gold standard that we can look safely to reopening? Have they resourced the capacity of ICU beds to keep us from having our hospitals overwhelmed? Like, where is the plan to move forward here? And Joe,
just to make this point,
the bottom line with the vaccines is government have put all their eggs in one basket. There's significant issues with that. You're expecting a production line to run fluidly at all times to produce vaccine to enable us to continue with that programme. Any amount of things can go wrong. I've previously called on the government to give us a plan for when it goes wrong and how we move forward to live with COVID. It hasn't arrived. It's still seemingly not a consideration, and the country continues in the longest lockdown it has in Europe.
The plans are there. Their plans are on the government website. And just to say, let's just go through the plan very, very briefly. April 12th, we had full return to schools for all pupils. Last Monday, for example, GAA training for intercounty returned. This coming Monday, we're looking at outdoor sports facilities reopening. Fingers crossed, it's looking good. Outdoor attractions, heritage sites, zoos, underage sports for kids. Outdoor training is returning. Funeral attendance up to 25. And then, just to clarify for Verona, the next stage of the plan, under consideration for May the 4th is the full reopening of construction. Phased return of non-essential retail commences with click and collect and outdoor retail. Recommencement of personal services on a staggered basis. Reopening of museums, recommencements of religious services on a staggered basis. These are under consideration.
They're the dates. What I'm asking is, for instance, we saw a huge outbreak on the Intel construction site last week. Why was it not put to Intel that in order to return to construction, they have to introduce antigen testing? Like, I'm tired of having the stable door closed when the horse is bolted. Why is it that we cannot make the provision to keep that construction open by using antigen testing?
I just want to let Matt Carthy in here. Matt.
Yeah, the problem hasn't been that the government haven't had a plan. The problem has been that the plan kept changing because the fundamentals have never been got right. I don't know how many times I was on with you.
The plan kept changing because it needed to.
Yes, and the reason it needed to change is because the fundamentals were never got right. We still don't have, I don't know how many times I've said this sentence to you, Katie, this year, we still don't have testing and tracing right, including antigen testing in vulnerable sectors like the meat sector and in big construction sites. We still don't have international travel right. We don't have yet mandatory quarantine for India, which is absolutely ludicrous stuff. We don't have the type of protections that will ensure, because I'm absolutely the same as every single person in our society. I want to see businesses back open. I want to see society reopened, but I want to ensure that we do it in a way that means that we never have to return to lockdown again. And we can't do that if we don't have the fundamentals right.
You mentioned India there, and I think a lot of people will be asking because they've seen and heard those heartbreaking stories coming out and very frightening stories of huge case numbers in India and their health system collapsing under the burden of it. Why is India not on our mandatory hotel quarantine list, Joe O'Brien?
And just a brief point before that. The strength of the plan has it's been agility to adapt to the changing circumstances which have been out of our control in terms of mutating viruses and supply of vaccine. Just to make that point. In terms of India, yes, absolutely. The Indian variant has been around since October. It's been looked at very closely at the moment because of the situation there at the moment in India. A large part of what has caused the situation in India at the moment is bad government decisions there in terms of not buying enough vaccine, but also allowing huge public gatherings over the last few weeks as well. But to reassure people, it is being very closely looked at the moment. And also, I think it's an important point to make as well, that people travelling from India to Ireland would generally go through one of the countries that's on the quarantine list as well and will be caught there. But it's very high on the radar at the moment.
And in terms of helping India, because there is now a move to provide aid to help them with oxygen and with funds, are we going to be part of that?
My understanding is that there is adequate oxygen in the country and that the military is holding it. It's also my understanding that funding is actually not an issue in India. It's not that India is short of money in terms of the situation they're in at the moment. It's just some very bad decisions in terms of easing lockdown and buying adequate vaccine are two of the key ones that stand out.
So you're saying we don't need to, that India is fine, actually?
I think we're open to contributing, but the messages that I've been getting, and I've checked before coming on here today, was that funding was not the problem with the situation in India at the moment.
Katie, if I could just come in there.
Verona.
On a point that Joe made, I think it's very significant that Joe recognises that access to vaccines is out of their control. But I think what is in their control is certainly putting the measures in place, as both myself and Matt have described, testing and tracing capabilities, ICU capabilities, antigen testing capabilities, that allows the country to move on where the vaccine rollout goes wrong. We need a plan to live with COVID. We cannot continue to keep people locked down at level 5 who cannot cope with the mental health scenario of it. Many of the public health measures don't take cognizance of the fact that we now have people being diagnosed with bowel cancer beyond a cure. I mean, this is where we need the measures that the government are in control of but have been behind the curve on. Antigen testing was first mentioned on the floor of the Dáil in August. We need to be preventative rather than reactive.
Okay. I want to move on to the travel industry and the tourism industry here, Minister. And can I ask you that report in the Irish Independent this morning that the government is planning to incentivise people to stay and holiday in Ireland rather than travel abroad? This is an anticipation of the green passport for travel to opening up later on in the summer. Is that happening? What can you tell me about this new stay and spend scheme?
Well, the plan is largely framed by the plan for reopening. There's no specific focused plan to say it has to be domestic and not abroad. But the way that the roadmap is going is that domestic will open first. So it makes sense for us to focus on that.
My colleague Catherine
Martin is going to be discussing with her other colleagues how we can incentivise that even more. To stay and spend that Minister Donoghue introduced didn't work because level 5
it
came
was
in.
The most I looked at it. It's the most complicated, convoluted system that was ever introduced. And
level 5 came in right after. That was the problem.
Can I say, Darren O'Rourke and Pearse Doherty showed the government very easy how you can incentivise and stimulate the domestic economy and domestic tourism through a voucher type scheme that has been implemented in other parts of the world. The government wouldn't listen and they proceeded with a system that everybody, the industry, opposition, and anybody with an ounce of sense told the government wasn't going to work
Let's talk to the industry then, because I want to bring in Elena Fitzgerald-Kane, who's president of the Irish Hotels Federation. Thanks for joining us, Elena. Do we have Elena on the line?
Good afternoon, everybody.
Oh, hi, Elena.
How are you?
Yeah, you were listening there to the minister. What's your anticipation of when you will be allowed to throw open your doors again, Elena?
I suppose, look, it's all about a safe and sustainable reopening. And, you know, with 80% vaccinations as a target, there's every hope how this will go in the right direction. I suppose from a tourism perspective, July and August are pivotal, but you need a few weeks of a lead in terms of getting to that. And we've been using the time in terms of upskilling, very much getting ready. But I suppose there's a lack of confidence right now and we do need a roadmap. So we're looking also to our other kind of neighbours in the UK, you know, and the border, and we're seeing their maps and that sense. But again, it's all about, I suppose, the vaccination markers. But we hope, you know, that outdoor dining potentially may be opening in May and potentially hotels opening soon after.
Have you given up on June for indoor, anything indoor at this stage?
Absolutely not. You know, I mean, we look at, I suppose, our controlled settings. We look at all the other measures that government have been in place. We look at the increasingly lower, I suppose, I'm looking at the vaccination rates and that. And there's every reason to hope. You know, last year there was very enjoyable, very safe experiences. We have a different factor this year insofar as the vaccination program. But there is a sense that whatever roadmap is there, that it does need to be linked very clearly to progress markers with a view to easing restrictions.
OK, about that stay and spend scheme and the fact that the minister, as Joe O'Brien has confirmed now, is looking at that to reform it. What should be done with that, do you think?
Well, we welcome anything that's going to stimulate demand. I suppose the key here is that it would be off-peak. I think the challenges before were because of closure periods. Equally, in terms of the functionality, was complicated. When you look at the UK system with the app, the fact that it was deducted at source, but also it needs to be more inclusive. There were particular sections of society that were going to be excluded the last time, and I think there's an opportunity there to address it.
Are you worried with the talk now of this EU digital green cert going to the Commission being voted on in the EU that this might cause people to change their holiday plans at this stage of the year?
I don't think so. I mean, I suppose, look, government advice is government advice. It's all about the vaccination rollout. But as an island nation, it's a critical part, you know, in terms of people coming into the country and going out of the country. And equally, we have to be thinking beyond, I suppose, Europe as well. You know, I look at the US, who are one of our major tourism partners, huge pent up demand there. So we do need to be making plans and provisions for vaccinated visitors.
OK, Minister.
Well, I think Elena is right to focus on the outdoor side of things after May. That is where it's going to happen. There has been government supports and put in place to do that. We expect there will be more as well. But I think there is a promising summer ahead. But it will be on the outdoor side of things initially, I think.
Are we looking at the UK model being copied? Is that what you're in relation to the stay and spend?
There'll be adaptations to the previous stay and spend. And Elena mentioned that it was important that it's for off-peak and it will be for off-peak as well. So this is for September on.
If I may, Katie.
Verona, very quickly, please.
I'd just like to say to the Minister that, you know, I think it's very, very fundamental that the VAT reduction that was brought in a budget, which the actual sector never got the benefit of, that it's paramount that that would stay in place to encourage, you know, people to staycation as well, where there would be significant advantages to going abroad if that was to come up to 13.5% again. So I think it's fundamental that it stays with the industry for a period of time.
Okay, and can I just clarify with you, is it being looked at to ensure that, as wasn't the case in the last stay and spend scheme, that pensioners, people on the PUP payment, people who are on welfare, that they could will be able to avail of whatever incentives are going to be put in place this time?
I don't have that detail yet, but Minister Martin will be talking to her colleagues next week about it.
We need to move away from a tax-based system and put in place a voucher scheme. They're the schemes that work. They're the schemes that actually stimulate business, and they're the schemes that have actually been proven to work. Anything that's based on the tax return system will not work, particularly for low-income families.
Minister, you are a Minister for Inclusion, and surely a stay-and-send scheme that excludes whole sectors of people who are not earning wages.
Yeah, no, I mean, it absolutely makes sense, and it has to be part of the mix and it has to be part of the discussion.
Going to be discussing that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I think that's all we have time for. Today's programme was produced by Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The sound was by Tom Norton and Elaine Conlon was our broadcast coordinator. I want to thank our panel. I want to thank you all for listening and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.